Hello and welcome to Tinfoil Helmets, your occasional spicy hot take roundup of the latest F1 rumors, all with the almost believable conspiracy theories to back them up. Here, everything is carefully researched for hours to make sure it's totally founded in logic, reason, and truth. Or not. Who knows? All right, Dominic, let's get right into this. What did we get right from Barcelona?
What did we get right? Well, I predicted that someone was going to shoot out of the new penultimate corner at Barcelona and stick it at full tilt into the barrier. I'm going to give myself a half point on this one because nobody did it during the race and nobody did it during qualifying, which in hindsight, I'm actually pretty surprised about. But Sargeant technically did do this in FP3, apparently. I have not seen it, but I am told that that's what he managed to do. So I'm going to give myself half a point.
I just want to say I love the new track layout. I think that chicane was always terrible.
Yes.
It was always horrible.
Yes.
New track,
yes.
Fantastic, from the gun.
Yes.
Way to go, Circuit of Barcelona. Fantastic, correcting your mistake. Fun fact, Alonso drove the old circuit when it didn't have a chicane. He was the only driver on the grid to have done that, I believe, in 2006.
And that didn't help him.
No.
Technically, I think Lewis drove it in F2.
F1 racing then.
Yes.
And I think he won that race, yes, too, in 2006. So really, all the stars were aligning for Alonso's next win this weekend. And, well, it didn't happen, but we could get into that later.
So the other prediction by me, which I was actually pretty sure was about to happen, was Alonso win on home turf. I'm going to give myself a fact zero on that because that was terrible. He was not even in the offing, let alone doing it. It was terrible. So, yeah, definitely a big fat no on that.
Yeah, and my prediction was a Merck podium. And not only did they get one podium, they got two podiums. So I have a bone to pick with you. I let you say in the last episode that Merck's Imola upgrades were barely visible. They had no effect on the car's performance relative to the rest of the field. Clearly, they didn't do anything right. And it was Monaco, so I'm like, okay, well, I'll let him have this one. I'm not so sure. And then the Mercedes come out, and they double podium.
I have a commentary on this later on, but I will concede the fact that you were correct and I was wrong. But yep. I will dispute the reasons behind that.
In our document, you were laughing about my Merck podium.
Yes,
and they got two. So
how many LOLs did you get? You got 1, 2, 3, 5. You got 5 LOLs from me, and so I was clearly -5. I am very wrong on that.
Yeah. So I'm also not so sure about your Imola upgrades will be very barely visible because it looks they're finally making progress forward with that car.
But have they? We should save this for the race because I have feelings on this. We should save this. Okay, so shall we move on to the occasional segment? Does so-and-so still have a job?
Yes, who are we concerned about their jobs this week?
Let's start with Nyck de Vries, who after an okay performance in Monaco, I think he's driving like a sim driver. I saw towards the end of the race, he comes into T1 and his whole way he was steering was just bonkers. It was like, what is he doing? It was pretty bad.
Time on the F1 game.
Yeah, too much time on the F1 game. And then as a kind of meta point about Nick's performance, Nick's terrible performance makes Albon look bad. But since Albon drives the same car, and Nyck de Vries had such a great performance at Monza when Albon was not unavailable, this implicitly reflects badly on Albon, suggesting that maybe he's as good as Nyck, which means actually terrible. The only reason he saved is because he actually did pretty good when he was in the Red Bull.
I'm a little bit inclined to disagree with that because, Monza is the straight circuits like Monza,
yes,
Baku, they suit the Williams very well.
Yes.
So that was a car that suited him very well. I don't think in hindsight Nyck did as good of a job in Monza as everybody thinks he did in Monza.
No, clearly not.
Right.
Clearly not.
But I think Alex could have probably got maybe similar position, but probably made it look better than Nyck did.
Yes, I think that would also possibly be true. But that's my meta concern is that as Nyck continues to do bad, it will reflect incorrectly, I think, on Albon. But we'll see.
I mean,
we'll see.
I think all we really learned is that everybody in that Williams is better than
Nyck Latifi.
Latifi, yeah. I think that's all we truly are. Latifi is easy to beat. We really just got to see Nyck versus Logan Sargeant to truly get a measure of the Williams second driver.
Yes, and Mr. Sargeant did not have a good race, but we'll talk about that in the race. So also, yeah. So we had Nyck Otmar, I think, is still an interesting question given the shocking performance of really the team around Alpine this weekend.
They were double points finishers, weren't they?
They did, but they screwed up Gasly's race. He qualified, what was it, fifth?
Well, Gasly screwed up his race by like six places of grid penalties.
No, but I think that was because the team didn't inform him. Like, they did a bad job of keeping him updated about what was going on. Maybe he could have handled it a little bit better, but I think the team did a bad job. Like, the commentary was when he screwed up Sainz's run, it's like he was told there was a Ferrari coming, and there was, except that there were two Ferraris coming, and so he kind of screwed it up. But I think that still falls on the team. They should have told him. So I think this reflects poorly on Otmar for continuing to restrict their capitalization.
If we're going to dive into team strategists are with their jobs on the line, we might as well add Javi in from Ferrari as well.
Why is... Do we need to have a special section on why is X still employed at Ferrari? It's just like the whole team, except maybe Fred gets a pass at the moment because he's brand new.
I'd keep Charles around. I'd keep Carlos around. They're good drivers.
Would you keep Charles around after his performance this weekend?
Yes.
And last weekend?
Yes.
Ooh, spicy.
Yes.
Spicy. Okay, last but not least, Lance. Does Lance still have a job?
I'm very curious if Lance is reading all the... or if somebody Aston Martin is reading all the press that Lance was starting to get of he is costing Aston their spot in the title, and it's like, Lance, you got to step it up this weekend, because I believe he did out-qualify Fernando.
Because Fernando had a broken car that was literally held together with tape.
Don't drive it through the gravel, then.
True, I think that was better than it could have been because Alonso has skills. It could have been worse.
That's true, but I'm not inclined to say like, oh well, he had a broken car. Yeah, don't drive your car through the gravel, and then
and then
you don't have to worry about having a broken car. I do agree. What they were saying, it was worth like 0.4, I think. In quality.
Which given how well he ended up qualifying, I think that was a pretty good job in the end of it. I'm going to call that a win from Alonso. But back to Lance. I'm pretty sure that Alonso was told to not put his best foot forward if he wanted to continue to drive the potentially race-winning vehicle, lest to make baby Lance look stupid.
I think this is one of those that we're going to have to wait and see, because it could be like, is this an outlier, or has Lance's wrist finally healed?
Maybe. That's the real question. We will find out in Canada, where he has the home race advantage as well.
Ah, yes. Our Canadian driver on the grid.
He's the only Canadian, right?
Latifi is gone, so yes.
Yes, okay. So it's his home race advantage. All the energy is poured into him. I expect a full grandstand full of Lance fans. Like, obviously, it's all going to be for him.
Is there going to be a Lance Stroll grandstand, do you think?
No! Who's going to go to the Lance Stroll grandstand? He has engenders no favour from the Canadian people. I'm not saying he's a bad person, but this isn't like Alonso, the little boy that could, or Carlos Sainz, who lives the ancestral success. This is Lance Stroll, who's a pay driver. No, there's no Lance Stroll grandstand. Unless his dad buys it and fills it with sycophants.
What about a Jacques Villeneuve... grandstand.
Yes, that could exist. I could totally believe that. Even if, like, he was running around the track, he would get that.
Yeah.
Because it's named after his dad.
That's true.
The whole track's his. Between race drama.
I did like the news that when, you know, we've talked before about, is Max going to be done racing F1 in 2028 or whatever when his contract's up, because it sounds like he's not the happiest. Well, Mario Andretti is going to convince him to come race the Indy 500 when he is done with F1.
I'm very curious to see whether Max does those sorts of things just because it's fun, right? Not because he'll be in it to win it, but he's going to go do only the Indy 500, and he will only go and do Le Mans, and then that's it.
Well, here's my it might be a bit spicy, but I think it's also slightly realistic, is he is making quite the name for himself in Formula One. We also know he is a big fan of a sim racing, right? He's what, on Team Redline or whatever it is, loves doing the big iRacing events, the other virtual racing events. I think when Max is done with F1, he is going to do a world tour of the races he's actually he's raced on iRacing. I could see him doing Indy. I can see him doing Le Mans. I can see him doing Bathurst. Like, I think Max is going to have these opportunities to say, hey, you do this well in the sim. Why don't you come do it for us for real life?
So here's the real question. Does Red Bull decide to capitalize on the brand love that they hopefully will have earned by 2028 and effectively create a Max Verstappen Red Bull team that just goes and does the things that he wants to do? I mean, that's probably pretty difficult to do for IndyCar, but I think that's plausible for Le Mans, and I think it's certainly plausible for Bathurst, another similar track.
I think it's incredibly easy to do for IndyCar because all the cars have different liveries from, like, different sponsors. So you have, like, you know, several teams in, like, say, Chip Ganassi Racing, but they're all running different liveries. So it's very easy say, yeah, Max is going to run an Andretti car in a Red Bull livery.
So Andretti Red Bull, effectively.
Yeah. Not even, or just a Red Bull livery, like. But yeah, I think that's it's kind of Max's retirement party in a sense. I think it's going to be a lot harder to do something like that in Australia, where you have the V8 supercars that already have Red Bull sponsoring and things like that. So how is he going to come into those situations compared to something like IndyCar, where I don't believe there's currently a Red Bull car in Indy, and you could just plop Max in.
Yep. I certainly think that's plausible. Okay, next one. You said you had that you added this, and I've only just briefly read it, that the V10 comeback.
Yeah, there's talks of V10s returning to Formula One, and I don't think it's necessarily the V10s everybody would be hoping for, but I'm optimistic because I like this direction of Formula One. I am one of these people that believes, you know, Formula One should always be at, like, the forefront of all motoring. And because, like, you know, it encourages teams to come in, and, like, Mercedes will want to work on this, Porsche will want to work on this, things like that, the big engine manufacturers. So if you're talking about sustainable fuels and other sorts of situations, or in sustainable fuels, or maybe I've heard talk of, like, hydrogen fuel cell cars, stuff like that. So if you're talking about how can we get these big, you know, engine manufacturers, Toyota, Honda, because Honda will be in and out forever. yeah, it's just what they do. They're in F1 for 5 years, and then they take a 5-year break, and then they're in F1 for 5 years, and they take a 5-year break. But giving these companies, these massive companies, a good reason to say, hey, we're going to try to build the best, you know, sustainable fuel vehicle we can, I think it's great. Because, like, not to get political on the Formula One podcast, but, like, there just isn't enough charging for electric cars. So having some sort of other fuel option that is more sustainable is a great way to think about Formula One. And, you know, hey, if we get V10s back burning probably not corn, but something else, like, I think it's a great move for the sport.
I think it's interesting to consider the impact specifically of the V10 part of that, right? The reality is that to be able to fire that many cylinders at such a rate to create the performance needed for F1, I think the fuel has to be super magical, along whatever axes that really means, whether that means combustion or whether that means it's just super environmentally friendly. I think it's really interesting. I do think it would be good to see the engine manufacturers go down that path. I do wonder in the long term whether it really helps in terms of the environment and the industry, but I think it's the right path for F1 to take until electric powertrains are at a level to sustain a race or close to a race at the speeds and the performance that F1 requires, you still need to stick with internal combustion engine. I think the reality is it for the car manufacturers, it becomes a transitory technology. Like, I could see Mercedes and Aston Martin and Honda and everybody building the combustion engine technology that they only sell in the comically expensive sports cars that really aren't practical in any way, but they do represent a halo brand experience, which really is what F1 is about for most of the manufacturers.
Yeah, absolutely. But I just think it would be, you think back to kind of the golden age of F1 that everybody loves to talk about, with, like, you know, either the 80s, 90s, 2000s, you know, when you're building these super engines that then you see somewhat in, like, the Ferraris and Lamborghinis. And yeah, so it'd be nice to see, hey, what can we do with some sort of sustainable biofuel or something? I think it'd be great.
Yeah, no, I agree. It could be very interesting.
And if you want to talk about, and in that sense, you could also talk about maybe removing some of the electrical energy stores and stuff, simplifying the cars a little bit, getting them a little bit smaller. Oh, man.
Yep.
We've cracked the code to Formula One right here.
Yes. Liberty Media should call us immediately and have us run the technical regulations for Formula One. Guaranteed. I'm absolutely the expert here. Should we move on to the race?
I think it's about that time. But first, we should probably talk about qualifying, because that was a weird qualifying.
That was very strange. And it was very reminiscent of Monaco, which, in hindsight, I blamed on Monaco. But I'm wondering if something has gone on in terms of the evolution of the cars and the upgrades that people have brought, that the cars are diverging more so than they look, but not diverging in terms of combined pace, but some are improving in qualifying and some are losing in the race. Improving in qualifying and some are losing in qualifying, and equally those people who lose in qualifying are gaining in the race. And that's why we're ending up with this really random grid. I mean, like, Charles getting knocked out in Q1? I mean, as much as I'd like to rag on Charles, that's ridiculous. Especially when his teammate made it all the way to second place.
Front row.
Yeah. It's very strange. It's very strange. It was a very random grid. And I know the water that came from the sky, I think people called it rain, facilitated part of that. After that first red flag, the track was basically dry and nobody had any excuse for being.
And then Russell and Perez were both out in Q2.
Yes.
On pace.
Yes, which is very strange. I mean, I'm more at the time, I was more accepting of understanding how it happened to George because he was not on the pace all weekend. But Perez, I was very surprised by that. That makes no sense. Like, he might not get to the front, but really getting knocked out in Q1, I think it was? That's very strange. What is going on there?
Yeah, I mean, well, he did bottle his, like, last lap and then reset the tires and went again, but wasn't enough.
Yeah, with, like, brand new soft tires and, like, after everybody else had rubbered the track in. What was he doing? Was he in a little La La Land?
Driving through gravel.
Very strange. Yes, but he didn't damage his car. It wasn't like he, you know, had a damaged floor like somebody called Fernando Alonso. It was very strange. And it's going to be really interesting to see if it again happens in Canada.
But I would say it was brilliant. It was very fun to watch. Because sometimes quali gets a little, like, 2x2, especially at Barcelona. So it was nice to, oh, wow, we have a scrambled grid and not via penalties.
Here's the thing. Everybody says that they want a scrambled grid. And I completely agree that that's what you want. But you don't want a forced scrambled grid. Right, when it's forced to be scrambled through some external mechanism that they choose to change something or whatever it is that they do to change the system, to change the process, change the order, it feels very forced and it's not natural. This was clearly like the drivers in the same car and they were miles apart for no apparently good reason, and that's good. That feels interesting. It feels like something is going on.
I definitely agree with you on, like, you know, a good scrambled grid is good, but only if it's a true scrambled grid. I will say, like, some of the qualifying of how, like, Formula E does it is very interesting in the terms of, I like the idea of, can you handicap the people at the front a little bit to make it harder for them to qualify through? So, like, I think Formula E is, like, I think groups, and if you're leading the championship, you're out in the first group, so you're on the greenest track. So as it rubbers in, the slower people have better conditions to set their lap times, hopefully. I mean, it might rain. Random elements come into play. But yeah, I mean, it's why we always like rain in qualifying, because it scrambles the grid.
Yeah. When a system is in place that uniformly scrambles it, for want of a better word, right? Like, everybody, it's predictable in what it means, but not necessarily the result. It's interesting. But when those process changes, I think, like, you know, they'll delete people's times, or they'll end up in a situation where the team does something stupid to force a change. It's not realistic. It's not fun. So what about George's non-excuse for whacking Lewis on the last penultimate lap in qualifying, and he drives into him, and the media, the commentators are like, oh, George apologized. But when you actually hear it, and when you're objective about what he said, he was not apologizing for driving into Lewis. He was apologizing for not qualifying higher. Supposedly the team has kissed and made up and everybody's happy and it was a mistake. But I have to say, I think that was to channel my inner Andrew. That was an example of George not willing to be able to admit a fault when it is clearly his fault.
I mean, two Mercedes coming together in Spain. Name a more iconic duo.
Traditions.
Yes.
Traditions. The only more iconic duo is Alain Prost and Ayrton Senna driving into each other. So, yes, now you've got George's Joker laugh.
Yeah, you want to move on to the race?
Yeah, I don't. I think qualifying was interesting, but then nothing really happened.
Sure. So, George got a great start off the line. And then kind of just drove off the track and took the escape road in turns one and two. Very reminiscent of a Rallycross Joker lap there of like, oh, hey, I'll just go over here. You know, get this out of the way. I went around the bollard. It's fine.
Also, Fernando Alonso in 2021, where he drove around the outside immediately on the first lap of Russia because in Sochi, because he knew that it was actually faster. If you planned it and you did it that way, it was very reminiscent of that.
Yeah, I wasn't sure. I don't think he actually planned it, but it was definitely one of these, well, I can back off and give the space, or I can just go this way. And he wasn't, I don't think he really gained any places as a result. But he definitely,
not directly.
No, but he definitely was able to keep his momentum and keep his foot in it, and he didn't lose the places. Because Checo, I think, went a little bit backwards on the start. He gave himself a world of pain to make up.
Yeah, because George made from 12th to 7th, I think, by the end of the second lap.
Yeah.
Which I think I honestly attribute it to the shortcut that he took. It may have been legal, it may have been allowed, but it still was a bit cheeky.
I agree. It was. I'm not going to sit here and say it's illegal, he did a bad thing, but it was very very heads-up driving.
Yes. Okay, what happened to Aston Martin's pace? Well, this car that was doing pretty good, yeah, it wasn't always at the front, but like it's been pretty good in the first six races. What happened? Where did it go? What did they do? Have they forgotten how to drive a car?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if this is a case of did Aston Martin, is Barcelona just not a good track for them, or have the Mercedes and Ferrari upgrades actually worked?
Did the Ferrari upgrades really work? Let's be brutally honest about that. I'm not sure that they did. I feel like they harmed the Ferrari.
I mean, well, Carlos finished ahead of both Astons.
Just barely. Barely.
20 seconds?
Yeah, but I think that is more a byproduct of where the initial qualifying played out than I think the pace of the car. I mean, to be fair, Sainz basically slowly but surely dribbled down the standings. He only needed a few more laps before he'd have been gotten by Stroll or Fernando. So I think it is curious. I don't think there's one race does not make a championship, but I thought it was very interesting that their pace just seemed to be nowhere, both in qualifying and in the race. Next one, what happened to Charles's pace? Like, both in the qualifying, which he blamed on a bent car, not clear how exactly it was bent. It was so bent that they fixed half of it so that he could start from the pit lane. And then in the race, where did he basically went nowhere until maybe three quarters of the way through.
Okay, I have some thoughts on this. Obviously, that's why we do this. First off, if you're in a Ferrari starting P19, way out of position, hell yeah, change everything on the car, start from the pit lane, because what's the difference?
I agree. It made perfect sense. Ferrari making a correct strategy call. It's got to be like a one in a million.
But then, man, did they screw up his race. Everything possible. They send him out on the hard tire.
Yeah.
Sure, fine. Gonna run long. We're gonna see how this plays out. There's gonna be high deg. We're talking two, maybe three stops. Didn't really see that much deg, by the way. It seemed like everybody was... Anyway... Carlos gets called in for his first pit. Carlos starts on the soft, gets called in for his first pit stop, lap 16?
Something like that, yeah.
Next lap, Charles boxes. They call Charles in. Off of hards, on hards. I think they put on softs or mediums. Doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
Race goes on.
They have now ruined any advantage that he had from starting on the hards.
Exactly.
It was completely pointless.
I think he was on softs. So now Charles is on softs, which seemed to be the softer medium, seemed to be the good tire to be on. So now, later in the race, I don't know if you've seen the audio clip. I know I sent it to you. It was great. Javi calls Charles in. Charles, box, box, box. We're going to box for hards. Max is complaining about the hards. We know the hard doesn't seem to be a good race tire right now. And Charles says, no, I want softs. Let's do softs. And he's coming around the couple final corners, and Javi's like, yep, understood. We got it. We're going to go softs. And Charles is like, still box this lap? Yep, still box this lap. Comes in, they put hard tires on.
Because it's Ferrari, and Ferrari doesn't care about its drivers. The drivers are just the hired help.
Exactly. But you started off some of this podcast talking about how, you know, is Charles done? Is he overrated? Is he not? Is he out of Ferrari? And I'm sitting here going, Ferrari are doing everything possible to screw over Charles this race.
Okay, there's two important points here. Two important points. One, yes, it is Ferrari's fault, but that doesn't matter. Ferrari think it's his fault, and therefore the great Illuminati that run Ferrari will have marked Charles's card. And two, more importantly, yes, he's being screwed by Ferrari. What a shocker. He needs to be able to drive better when he's being screwed by Ferrari. Like, there's a difference between, I'm a driver, I'm a team, and despite my team, I do okay. And he is not that. He is, in spite of his team, he's doing even worse than he probably should be if he is the second coming of Michael Schumacher.
I will say that I think Charles has too much loyalty to Ferrari. Because when Seb came into Ferrari, Seb wanted to be the second coming of Michael Schumacher. He came in, and you could hear the confrontation on the radio between him and, I still believe, Javi, of, let me give you a task. I believe that was at Spain, too. The, let me give you a task. What lap times do I need to do for, like, the next, you know, five laps to finish ahead of somebody? What's the delta? What time do I need to do?
We are checking. Yeah. We are checking.
And I think because, well, Charles was a Ferrari Academy driver, was he not? Charles was a Ferrari Academy driver. He drove the wheels off that Alfa for that season. Immediately moved into Ferrari. He is such ingrained in Ferrari, and in some ways probably very grateful for Ferrari, that he will not criticize Ferrari. He will not do the Seb, let me give you a task. Because, like, if he's really getting to this point, why does he come in when he's on the hards? Nope, I got this. I'm not coming in.
This is the difference between the good drivers and the great drivers. In all honesty, it is truly the difference. And Max clearly knows what he's doing, right? He, like, today was a great example. Just ignore what the engineer says. I think Lewis has shown that in the past. I think he's built a good enough relationship with Bono that you don't see it expressed as much, but he has done that in the past. You see that with, you saw it with Seb, per your point a few minutes ago. You've certainly seen it with people like Alonso, and that those are the people who are the great drivers. And I don't know if Charles is able to do that. Maybe he is just the, maybe it's a byproduct of the Ferrari Academy, but he is just the higher driver. He is just a person. He's a brain that you stick in a car and tell it to go around the circuit. Everything else is about the rest of the team.
So have we found the next Aston Martin driver?
Maybe that's what it is. I mean, my supposition is that Charles's pace has gone out because he's been told he's been fired because he's going to be replaced by Lewis. And therefore he's just in the doldrums. But maybe that's it. Maybe this is truly the replacement for Lance Stroll.
But on the flip side, if I'm Lewis, I'm not going to Ferrari.
Oh, hell no. Nobody should go to Ferrari. Literally nobody in their entire F1 career, excluding Michael Schumacher. And even then, everybody like, that's a dumb idea. Nobody in their career should ever say the question, I would like to drive at Ferrari because I think they will get me to my World Drivers' Championship. Like, I think it has happened once, and that once was Michael Schumacher. It has never happened for anybody else.
We can also not discredit the team that Schumacher had around him at Ferrari, because Ross Brawn was not going to take any of that shit either.
No. But between Jean Todt and the technical people that were brought over from Benetton, like, Michael Schumacher reshaped that team. He did a great job. And that's the difference with what he managed to pull off. And Ferrari has not hit that low to allow that to happen again.
Did you watch the Sky coverage of the race?
I listened to their commentary, yes.
I did like Martin Brundle's comment of what driver would you have or would you like to hire on the grid? Adrian Newey.
I like that. I get a little irked by the cult of personality that appears around. I think it's almost justified in the case of drivers in some ways because they are out there and they are driving the car. But then there's a cult personality around, you know, an engineer or a designer, and I do worry that it overinflates the specific input that Newey had. What shouldn't be discounted is the fact that he has built a team and created a culture that lets them build such an amazing car. But yes, I thought that was quite funny.
Sure, but if that's the person who can do that, he is still, yeah, the best driver I would hire off the grid is Adrian Newey.
And even with the greatest car, you can be Sergio Perez and not really be able to win with it.
And we've also seen other engineers come and go in Formula One of like, oh, they got really lucky making a good car once. We can look at, like, Adrian's made really good cars in, like, 4 or 5 different formulas.
Yeah, and teams.
Yeah. He's
McLaren, Williams, Red Bull.
He didn't nail it once with, like, the double diffuser. No, he's been going strong since, like, the 90s.
So related to what happened to Charles's pace, what happened to Ferrari's pace? I know that the Sainz, you know, ended up, what was it, fifth? Who was fourth?
Perez.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about Perez. He's very forgettable.
Everybody forgot about Perez.
Yeah, exactly.
We didn't even list him in our document anywhere.
Yeah, exactly, because who wants to? Ferrari, what happened to their pace? Like, they brought an upgrade. They've got the Red Bull side pods. You know, that was just the last saving grace, and it's the one thing that will, you know, make them amazing, and they were literally nowhere.
Well, upgrades aren't always upgrades.
No, they aren't. And maybe Mercedes sold Ferrari their terrible CFD system, which had no correlation, and they did a swapsy, and that's how Mercedes had managed to make it a bit better.
I mean, Ferrari are sitting fourth in the driver or the constructor standings. They finished behind the Mercedes, or Carlos finished behind both Red Bulls, both Mercedes, ahead of the Astons. Like, maybe their pace is gone. Maybe this is just where they are.
They were number two last year, without question. They were, like, the car exploded a lot, but what did they do? They managed to develop a new car that was amazing last year. It was a really good car, apart from it bounced a bit too much. What happened? Like, where did it go? And what happened to the pace that I think they kind of had at the beginning of the season? Maybe it wasn't brilliant, but, like, now they're going backwards? It's very strange.
They've always been good around Bahrain, so, like, it's not surprising.
Yeah, true.
You know, Mercedes has been good around Barcelona. Ferrari's good around Bahrain.
Yes. Yes, and this is where I will interject with my commentary with you saying at the beginning and quibbling my Mercedes podium. Mercedes last year turned up at Barcelona and got a podium with the terrible car. I do really wonder whether this is just, they know this track, Lewis loves this track, and they've been able to do well at it, and it's just going to be back to fifth and sixth next week.
Not to skip ahead, but I don't have a Mercedes double podium on my prediction for Canada.
Indeed, indeed. Okay, next item in the list. Why did Norris fail to go anywhere after he was brutally mugged by hammering Hamilton?
Because McLaren have no pace outside of one lap. Like, Piastri didn't go very well either. Like, he fell back.
No, I think I expected more of Norris. Just, he basically languished at the back with Sargent for the entire race. It was ridiculous. He finished 17th, right?
I mean, Piastri was third and he didn't even hit anybody.
Third where?
Oh, sorry, 13th. My bad. Why did I say third?
I was like, third?
Sorry,
13th. What alternative reality? 13th, and he didn't hit anybody.
And he didn't hit anybody.
I just felt that even if the car was terrible, he would have been able to do better than Bottas and Sargent. So, and like, I feel like he should have been up maybe, you know, 15th, 14th, 13th, but he wasn't, so I don't know. But the post-race interview was that he said the car was bloody awful.
And Horner had some words for Nico after the race.
I wasn't quite sure how to interpret that. I didn't listen to the audio. I only read the text, so I think I was missing some of the dripping sarcasm.
Yeah, but I mean, for those who might not have heard it, it was pretty much Nico asked where was Perez's pace, and Christian was like, "You're so critical of drivers now that you're no longer a driver." It was some very lovely Christian Horner shade for sure, but I think it goes back to a conversation 4 or 5 podcasts ago of who's the best dad team principal. And man, Christian Horner sticks up for his kids. Nobody likes George Russell.
We should preface that with the comment I was about to make, which was, did George actually drive a better race than Lewis, given that he came from P12 and Lewis came from P4?
I mean, Lewis won driver of the day, but I think objectively...
Did he?
He did. Won driver of the day. George was third in voting. When I saw it flash up on the screen, it was Lewis, Perez, then George.
Fascinating.
So this was my take of nobody likes George Russell. Because
not enough to vote for him.
Well, we know the driver of the day is a bit of a popularity contest. But I think objectively, George was probably the driver of the day.
Based on his performance on track, I think that was certainly the case.
I mean, for me, it's either George or Max, because just Max did nothing wrong.
I think to drill down on that before we get back to the dislike of George, I do think that it's interesting to reflect. I spent a lot of time watching the gaps between the drivers, and I thought it was pretty interesting that George is coming through the field, and I think he did a pretty good job of catching up with people, getting past them. But every time you're like, wow, he's rocking up on that person. As soon as he got to within, you know, that same gap he had on all those other drivers against Lewis, he couldn't get any closer. Now, maybe there were super secret radio messages or flashing lights on his dashboard that were saying, like, no, stay there, boy. I actually think that this is a great example of Lewis, because he's a seven-time world champion and the GOAT, that he had a great day today and he enjoyed the car and he drove the wheels off that car and got it into a great position. But he didn't put his soul into it. He didn't make it so that he had to fight. He's like, oh, somebody's coming up behind me that I have to worry about. I suppose I better drive a little bit quicker. To the point that he didn't sweat, right? George sweated so much he thought it was raining. So much. But no, we didn't hear that from Lewis. You didn't see him get out of the car and look tired. He was just like, all right, mate, yeah, great car, good job, let's keep driving. So yeah, I think it's interesting, and it's the fact that he drove so well and nobody wanted to vote for him is pretty interesting though.
Because objectively, I think George was the best driver of the day. For coming through the field, how he did it, I think he did a great job.
He didn't drive anybody off the track.
He didn't.
He learned from his lesson yesterday from driving his teammate off the track.
Speaking of driving somebody off the track, I think the stewards might be concerned about their social credit score, because they're definitely helping it go up.
What is the social credit score?
That's the point system kind of they have in China to, like, you know, you build your Chinese credit as you are a good citizen.
Oh, and, I see.
And, yes. You know, Guan Yuzhou gets forced off the track. Tsunoda gets a 5-second penalty, the only penalty given out in the race.
Indeed.
And
indeed.
So I think they're concerned about their social credit score. Maybe this is China coming back on the calendar in 2024.
I think that might be true, because if you watch it, I don't think Yuki did anything. I think Yuki was wide. I think Joe was like, he just panicked and twitched and went off the track. I don't think that Yuki's penalty was
unjustified. It was close, but given there was no, if there was contact, I'm more okay with Yuki getting
the penalty. Yeah.
But
yeah.
With no contact, what is going on?
I don't think that was worth a penalty. And I still think that it was a nervous twitch. I don't think Yuki moved into him. I think Guan Yu Zhou was just like, what? And just panicked and just drove off the thing. And so, yeah, they're doing that to get the points so that they can come back next year.
Did you see Gunter Steiner got called to the steward's office for saying something mean about the stewards?
I did see that. And yes, I thought it was interesting. And I agree with him.
The NFL doesn't have full-time officials, and that's also weird.
When people say they're not full-time, I assume they are full-time as in they have proper real meaningful training, they have proper contracts, they have proper employment verification, etc., etc. It's just that they don't work 24/7 for the NFL.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing about, like, NFL is occasionally you'll get, like, officials hired to help, like, ref a practice, just to, like, help understand what things will get called, what things won't get called, and none of the actual officials do that.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it's like some third party.
By policy?
I don't know enough to comment. But I do know that the officials... And this is from what I've gathered from occasional listening to the Pat McAfee show. Man, so Lewis had a good weekend. His contract's up. I guess he still wants to drive for Mercedes.
Yeah, indeed. I will definitely believe that the best drive you ever get out of a driver is immediately the race before his contract is renewed. Even if it's like been basically a done deal, it is always that one. And so it's going to be interesting to see if Lewis next weekend, who drove pretty good two races, to be brutally honest. I think he seemed very cheerful and enjoyed Monaco, even though he didn't necessarily have an amazing result. I think that's really interesting. And so it's going to be interesting to see what happens, whether he gets whooped by George again.
He's always done well at Canada. It's a track he likes.
It was his first win.
That's true. So it'll be interesting to see if he does get a contract renewal. What's stronger, Lewis's love of Canada or the contract renewal curse?
Oh, interesting. Interesting. We will have to come back to that.
Yeah.
I think we need to make a note for that for the predictions for next week.
Yeah. Well, if I'm Mercedes, I'm holding off till after Canada. Well, we got Canada and then Silverstone, I think?
That seems about right.
Yeah.
Something like
that. So really, maybe just hold off until the summer break. Get that.
Indeed. Yeah. Indeed. And he likes Hungary too, so yeah, you definitely hold up until after the summer break.
Yeah, yeah. Get all that done. Oh, there was one more thing that I wanted to talk about. Is Max finally going to get a 10 of 10 from the pundit scoring?
No, he won't.
Because he got a black and white flag for cutting the corners?
He got a black and white flag, number one. And number two, he didn't win by that much. It was only 24 seconds.
Oh, only 24 seconds.
Yeah.
A week after a 27-second victory, which was the largest since 2021. Yeah.
Yep. So, No, he won't. Somebody will find something to dig him on.
Fastest in FP1, fastest in FP2, fastest in FP3, fastest in qualifying, fastest in the race, fastest lap, led every lap. Yeah, what
did
else?
Did he really lead every lap?
He led every lap.
He did, because he came out in front of Perez, and I couldn't quite work out how he'd managed to pull it off.
The only time he didn't, like, even technically lead the race was like when Sainz got his front wing slightly into turn one. That was the only time Max did not lead the race.
There we go. That's why it's not a 10 out of 10. It's a 9.8.
Yeah, he only led of like the almost 300 kilometers of, or the 300 kilometers of a Formula One race. He was not leading for 10 meters.
Indeed. But, you know, it still doesn't count. He could have done better. This is supposedly the next GOAT. But, you know, it was a Grand Slam, so everybody likes a good Grand Slam.
Yeah. Yeah, the race behind him was pretty good. Race for first was absolutely terrible because it was just Max just driving away.
And this is going to sound really strange. I blame Perez for that.
Yeah, that's not a bad take.
It's not a bad.
I saw somebody cut together highlights of today's Formula One race, and it was just the 7 seconds of the start. And Max Verstappen threw one and two. Great, we're done.
Yeah, I subscribe to that. Even though it wasn't the most exciting race, I thought it was actually a good race. Yeah. I think it was. I will say personally, I am very happy that we are back on real racing tracks again. I am not a fan of street tracks. I think they don't engender real racing at the end of the day.
I disagree solely because if Liberty Media happens to listen to this podcast and wants to send two people to Las Vegas, I am a big fan of street tracks and wholeheartedly love them and will accept the tickets.
Which is why you need to also send me so that I can play the contrary view and I can have my opinion changed.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yes, street tracks are terrible. Change my mind, Liberty.
Yeah, apart from Las Vegas is going to be the boringest race of the year.
I mean, by that point in time, Max and Red Bull could have the Constructors and Drivers Championships wrapped up. Does Red Bull even race, or are they just partying all weekend?
Oh, that would be pretty funny if they just did that. You know, they should let Max take the weekend off, get rid of Perez, put Danny Ric and Liam Lawson in the car for the weekend and see what happens.
There you go. That would be funny. I'd love to see that.
Yeah. Okay, spicy takes and rumors. I'm going to open with the fact that since AlphaTauri is searching for a new team principal, I think they should bring back Cyril Abitbol from Renault. I think that could be really interesting. I think he's got chutzpah and the spicy sparks that we would see with him and Horner and effectively the same team would be worth it alone for that to happen.
New best friends?
New BFFs. Especially if they let Cyril run Red Bull powertrains. Oh my word, that's what they should do. Don't get bumped at AlphaTauri. Let him run Red Bull powertrains. That'd be amazing.
There's no way Christian's going to go for that. He saw the shit they did with the Renault engine.
Indeed. Next one. What if Haas hire drivers who can actually race? Would the cost benefit them in points revenue? I was watching. I thought Hulk did some pretty good laps. Generally, he had fastest lap for the longest time of the race. He did a pretty good qualifying pace. But he just can't seem to race forward. And I think K-Mag has a very similar problem. And the Hulk has shown up K-Mag. I wonder if Haas actually paid for a real driver. Like, what happens if they got Danny Ric? Like, that car is clearly not a tractor. It's a pretty good car. It's got some pace in it for the midfield. What if we got Danny Ric and maybe, I don't know, throw Seb in there and pay for him or something like that? They seem to be cheap to not pay their drivers, and I'm questioning whether that is the right financial choice.
Well, the only question I have there, and it's a very painful question I have to ask, is Danny Ric a good enough driver anymore?
I think he could definitely be better than the Hulk. Next spicy take. Did you see Shakira was at the race?
Shakira was at the race?
Shakira was at the race, but she was in the Aston Martin garage. Powered by Mercedes? But where was Taylor Swift? Has Alonso? Was this just a play to get Alonso with Shakira? That's a really interesting question, but it was right at the very end. There was a long, 15-second shot of Shakira smiling and waving at the camera. So I think there's something interesting in there. Maybe it's just misdirection and that they've put her in that garage so that we stop saying that she's dating Lewis Hamilton. But I think that reinforces a previously held statement about Lewis and Shakira. Shall we move on to crazy but plausible predictions / wrap-up? If you are Lance Stroll and you are offered a seat at Ferrari, do you take it?
Why would Ferrari offer Lance Stroll a seat?
Because nobody else will take a Ferrari seat because it's a tractor and the team is incompetent.
No.
That's why.
Well, if anything, you know who's got to take it. Daniel Ricciardo. Yeah. He's got the Italian name.
True. True. They can finally claim an Italian is driving a Ferrari. Yeah, possible.
Yeah.
Possible.
I could see that happening.
But if you were Lance and you were offered that seat at the Ferrari, like, would you take that? He strikes me as the kind of person that he would take it, even if the team was terrible.
I don't think Lance takes it. I think Lawrence makes Lance take it.
Oh, now that we're there. We won't know until the book comes out.
Right, because that solves all of Lawrence's problems.
Yes, it does. His son is driving for a number one world championship winning team with the Ferrari brand.
Nobody's going to refer to him as a pay driver.
No, exactly. And he will have a free seat that he can finally put someone in so that they don't lose second place in the championship.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, there we go. That's it. Predictions for Canada. The first one is rain in Canada. I think it's going to rain. It always seems to rain in Canada.
Oh, I forgot to put one of my predictions on here. We'll get to it. Okay. I'll ask you right now. Who's winning the boat race?
The boat race?
The boat race.
The boat race?
Yeah, where the mechanics make a boat and paddle across the
I have never heard of this.
The crew spot from the Olympics.
The only answer at this point is Red Bull.
I think Williams have been good at it in the past.
True, maybe. But I don't think Merck's going to be up there. Ferrari won't because it's too distracted. The boat will sink as soon as it starts moving. I think it's Red Bull. Because they make boats too.
Yeah, you need to look up the Canada boat race, because essentially they're given like scraps of stuff, and it's whoever can make like the best boat out of these supplies.
Interesting.
And
I'm gonna go with Red Bull.
Yeah,
Red Bull.
I think Williams has done well in the past. I'm gonna say Aston Martin are gonna win the boat race if it happens.
Okay, I could believe that.
Yeah. But,
okay, so rain in Canada? Yes. No.
Sure.
Okay,
it's great. A bit boring of a prediction these days, because I think we've said that 3 podcasts in a row now.
Yeah, well, you know, it is that time of the year.
Fine, I'll say sunshine in Canada.
Okay, there we go, just to be contrarian. What about Debris or Sargeant? We'll put it into the Wall of Champions. I think that's inevitable.
I think you can't discount either of the Haas drivers.
True, they've not been very crashy this year.
Yeah, until
Until
you hit the Wall of Champions.
I know, but they haven't. There's been many a wall they could have crashed it into, and they haven't yet.
I'll say Checo as that is the closest he's going to get to being a champion is going into the Wall of Champions.
Yes, I did also have Perez will continue to repeat this period of racing that was last year by underperforming and breaking the car, because he drove it straight into a corner last year. But I could see maybe he wants to step it up to go into the World of Champions because he thinks he's World Championship material. He's just failed to point out the fact that it's not really champions that drive into the Wall of Champions.
I believe Lewis and Michael have both driven into the Wall of Champions.
They are the exception that proves the rule. Next prediction, again from me, is Merck will be back in 5th and 6th, per the points that I've made earlier that the car is good at Barcelona, but it's still crap.
I will say George will be back in 6th. I'll say Lewis will go up to Lewis will get another podium. Lewis likes Canada. Lewis likes side pods. I'll say Lewis for a podium.
If he is still vibing with the car, which he seems to be, I can believe that. But I think my default prediction is 5th and 6th. So, do you want to go for the last prediction here?
Yeah, I think Williams is going to be in the points.
I can believe that. I mean,
it's going to be Alex because it's not going to be Logan.
Well, yes, I can believe that again because I think it's fast track. Lots of straight bits.
Lots of straight bits, fast track, low wing. It's where the Williams thrives.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Safety car?
It's Canada. Why wouldn't we have a safety car?
We haven't had one
especially
weeks.
If it's raining.
We didn't have one at Imola. We didn't have one at Monaco. We didn't have one in Spain.
You can't say we didn't have one at Imola. Like,
Dominic, was there a safety car at Imola during the
race? Yes, there was, for the entire city.
That's a hell of a cue.
Indeed.
I mean, did the safety car come out during the race at Imola? No.
Have you considered being a politician?
We didn't have one in Miami either.
True. So it is interesting. People seem to have stopped crashing. They're not taking enough risks.
We had all the safety cars in Australia, though.
We did. It was safety car palooza.
Yeah. So maybe it's time for a safety car again. It is Canada.
Indeed.
But it was Monaco, and it was, yeah.
So that's another week of Tinfoil Helmets. We're always waiting for your feedback. Write into us at feedback@tinfoilhelmets.com and let us know your conspiracies, feedback, and wants. Also, tell your friends to listen, like, rate, and subscribe. We're always waiting for that little bling bell that we get.